But just as the squad entered, gouts of gray smoke spurted through the tunnels, carrying dust and debris along with a hot wind. Wedge shook his head to clear his ringing ears. He climbed to his knees and then to his feet again. "I need an assessment of the damages," he shouted. "Quick!" Three of the leading soldiers raced down the hall only to encounter a group of Maw installation personnel fleeing the wreckage. The saboteurs were led by a one-armed brute of a man with purplish-green skin and a sour expression. Wedge's team snapped up their weapons, training the barrels of their blaster rifles on the saboteurs, who halted with a clatter like machine components locking into place. The one-armed man skidded to a stop and looked around wildly. The rest of his crew glared at the New Republic soldiers. "Drop your weapons," Wedge said. The large brute raised his single hand, palm outward, to show that he carried no weapons. Wedge was surprised to see that the others were also unarmed. "It's too late to stop anything," the one-armed man said. "I am Worman, division leader for plant operations. Accept my surrender. My team and I would appreciate it if you'd get us off this rock before the whole thing explodes." Wedge pointed to four of his soldiers. "Use binders. See that the prisoners are secured. We've got to get that power reactor functioning again, or we'll have to evacuate." The Maw saboteurs did not resist as the squad took them into custody, though Wedge's men looked confused about how to apply binders to Worman's single arm. Wedge and the technicians proceeded cautiously into the reactor housing. The heat struck him like a sand whirl during the hot season on Tatooine. The air smelled thick with acrid lubricants, molten metal, and charred high-energy explosives. Red warning lights flooded the chamber, reflecting from whistling jets of steam like droplets of flying blood. Laboring pumps and engines thudded with a pounding beat that made Wedge's skull ache. A large reactor component had been flagged, left with ragged, dripping edges. He squinted as the techs ran forward, yanking handheld detectors from their belts to study radiation leaks. One trotted up to Wedge. "Both the primary and the backup cooling pumps have been destroyed. Our friend Worman was right. He has initiated a meltdown, and there's nothing we can do to stop it. We can't fix this equipment." "Can we shut down the reactor?" Wedge said. "It's been locked on, and the controls are destroyed," the tech answered. "I suppose there's a chance we could reroute and rig up temporary systems in an hour or two. But if we shut the reactor down, we also terminate power and life support to the installation." Wedge looked around the wreckage as his stomach sank. With his boot, he kicked a broken piece of plasteel shielding. It clattered hollowly across the floor until the throbbing engine swallowed the sound. "I didn't lead this strike force just to let all the scientists and the Death Star get away while the whole installation is destroyed under my feet." He drew a deep breath and tapped his fingers together in an attempt to concentrate, as Qui often did, though he wasn't sure it worked. Then he yanked the comm link from his hip and gripped it, toggling on the frequency for the flagship Yavaris. "Captain," he said, "get me some engineering experts right away. We need to rig up emergency cooling pumps for the main power reactor. I know we don't have much equipment, but our hyperdrive cooling systems shouldn't be too dissimilar to what this reactor uses. Take one of the corvettes offline and remove the engine pumps. We've got to get something working down here to hold us until we can remove everything of value." The two technicians looked up at Wedge and smiled. "That just might work, sir." Wedge ushered them back to where the prisoners were held, vowing not to let the Imperials win so easily. Kryzook felt like a stranger in her own house. She walked timidly into the room she had identified as her former laboratory, expecting something to jump out at her, memories to come flooding back. The illumination came on, shedding a cold white glow on the design apparatus, her computer terminals, her furniture. This place had been her home, the center of her life for more than a decade. But it looked like a foreign land to her now. She stared in amazement and sighed. C-3PO whirred as he followed her into the room. "I still don't know why I'm here, Dr. Zook. I can assist you in assimilating the leftover data, but I'm a protocol droid, not a slicer. Perhaps you should have brought my counterpart, R2-D2. He's much better at this sort of thing than I am. He's a fine model, but a bit too headstrong for a droid, if you catch my meaning." Qui ignored him as she stepped farther into the room, walking on tiptoes. Her skin felt cold and clammy. The air smelled stale, empty. She trembled as she ran her fingers along the cool synthetic stone of the thick support pillars. She caught a flash of distant memory. A ragged Han Solo tied to this pillar, barely able to hold his head upright after the deep interrogation Admiral Dalla had performed on him. Twy went over to the lab table, picked up her spectral analysis sensors, materials properties analyzers, stress and strain simulators, and a holographic 3D design projector that glittered darkly under the bright lights. "My, this appears to be a completely adequate workspace, Dr. Zooks," 3PO said. "Spacious and clean. I'm sure you accomplished a great deal here. Believe me, I've seen far more cluttered research areas and facilities on Coruscant." 3PO, why don't you take an inventory of the equipment you see, Qui told him, just to keep the droid quiet so she could think. Pay particular attention to any demonstration models you find. Those could be significant. Qui discovered a small musical keypad lying half-hidden in a pile of printouts and handwritten notes. Beside the keypad stood the milky eye of a powerless computer terminal. She switched the terminal on, but the screen demanded her password before it would allow her access to her own files. So much for that. Qui picked up the musical keypad and cradled it. The instrument felt familiar and yet alien. She touched a few of the keys and listened to the soft high notes that issued from it. She remembered standing in the shattered debris of the Cathedral of Winds, picking up a fragment of one of the windpipes and blowing a slow, mournful melody through it. The winged Vors had snatched the flute from her, insisting that there be no more music until the cathedral itself was rebuilt. But this keypad held her own music. Qui vaguely recalled using it, but she couldn't quite picture for what. A flickering image came to mind, like a slick, wet fruit that slipped from her fingers every time she tried to grasp it. Setting the keypad down, suspecting she might never come back. She winced, drew a breath, and tapped her fingers together, trying to think. Han Solo. Yes, she had left everything untouched as she attempted to rescue Han and escape with the Sun Crusher. She let her long blue fingers dance across the musical keys. Her mind remembered no particular sequence, but her body knew. Her hands moved by habit, tapping out a quick loop of melody. She smiled. It seemed so familiar to her. When she finished the sequence of notes, her computer screen winked. Password accepted. She blinked her indigo eyes, astonished at what she had done. Error, the computer printed. Main database unavailable. Searching for backups. Files damaged. Qui suspected Tal Sivran might have destroyed the computer core before fleeing in the Death Star prototype. But she must have left something stored within the temporary memory of her own terminal. Recovered files follow, the screen said. Qui looked through a window into her own journals, her personal notes. Her heart pounded as she scanned words she herself had typed. But it was not herself. It was another Qui Zooks. A Qui from the past who had been brainwashed by Imperials. A Qui who had been twisted as a child and forced to perform to the utter limits of her mental abilities. Taking shallow breaths, she read her daily accounts with growing uneasiness. The experiments she had performed, simulations she had run on the computer, meetings she had attended, endless progress reports she had filed for Director Sivran. Though she remembered none of it, it appalled her to realize that she had done nothing but work. Her only joy had come from completed experiments, her only moments of excitement when tests proved her designs to be reliable. Was this all my life was? Qui asked. She scrolled down, scanning day after identical day. How empty, she muttered. Excuse me, 3PO said. Did you ask for assistance? Oh, 3PO. She shook her head and found tears stinging her eyes. She heard footsteps in the outer corridor and turned as Wedge entered the lab. His face was smudged with grime, his uniform rumpled. He looked sweaty and exhausted, but she rushed to him and hugged him. He squeezed her shoulders, then ran his fingers through her feathery, pearlescent hair. Is it bad? He said. Sorry I couldn't be here when you first entered the lab. I had an emergency. Qui shook her head. No, I had to face this myself anyway. Find anything useful? He stepped away from her, becoming the general again. We need to know how many scientists were at the installation. Most got away in the Death Star, but any information you have. Qui stiffened and looked back at her computer terminal. I'm not sure I can help you. Her voice carried a desolate, lost quality. I've been looking over my daily life. It doesn't look like I knew any of the other scientists. I had no friends here. She looked at him, widening her depthless eyes. more than 10 years of my life, and I knew no one. I worked. I thought I was dedicated. Defeating universal challenges meant a great deal to me, but I didn't even know what it was for. All I cared about was finding the next solution. How could I have been so naive? Wed gave her an encouraging hug. He felt so warm and comforting against her. That's all over, Qui. It'll never happen to you again. You've been let out of the cage, and I'm here to help show you the rest of the universe, if you'll come along with me.
Yes, Wedge.
She looked up at him with a faint smile.
Of course I'll come with you.
Wedge's comlink beeped at him from his waist, and he pulled it out with a sigh. Yes, what is it? He said. General Antilles, we brought down some temporary equipment to the reactor facility. We modified the critical components taken from one of the Corvettes, as you suggested. We've managed to emplace them, and the systems are marginally functional. The core temperature levels of the reactor have begun dropping, and we expect them to go below the red lines within the next several hours. Good. Do we have a time limit here, then? Wedge said. Well, the technician's voice answered, the reactors are still shaky, but they're stable for now. Good work, Wedge said. Pass along my commendations to your people. Yes, sir. Wedge switched off and smiled at Qui. See, everything's working out after all, he said. She nodded, raising her face to look through the long, narrow window at the top of the wall. Pools of hot gas drifted around the Maw's black holes. They seemed safe here, walled off from the conflicts of the galaxy. Qui had fought her greatest personal battles, and now she could allow herself to relax just a little. But before she could turn away, she saw a shadow appear in the multicolored nebula, a huge triangular shape like a spear point plunging through the gases and emerging into the safe gravitational island. Qui stiffened, biting back an outcry of panic. Wedge let go of her and whirled, looking up. Oh, dear, 3PO said. Battered and blackened, an Imperial Star Destroyer came through the Maw with its weapons already powering up. Its once white hull was blistered and streaked with burn marks, its shielding plates damaged by an inferno of destruction. Admiral Dalla's flagship, the Gorgon, had returned to Maw installation. 19. The Imperial spider walkers ascended the steep, pitted stone pinnacle, their long metal legs bent at odd angles as their claws hauled them toward the heavy blast doors protecting Winter and baby Anakin. Winter stood in the operations room, her jaw clenched, her eyes narrowed as she viewed the progress of the assault transports. They had reached her first line of defenses. When establishing the Anoth hiding place, Admiral Akbar and Luke Skywalker had been unwilling to rely entirely on secrecy. They had tried to plan for every possible attack scenario. Winter had hoped she would never need to test those contingency plans, but now she had to fight for the child's life and her own. Winter looked down at her status panels. The foreign intruder defense organism was primed and ready for automatic strike. She anticipated that Fido could take out at least two of the spider walkers. She watched, gripping the edge of the consoles to steady herself. Scuttling up the rock wall with insectile legs, the spider walkers reached a line of caves, small openings to a labyrinth of dead ends and grottos within the stone. End of side 3. To continue, turn the cassette over.